We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Coming off a victory, good to have another Buffs Insider, a weekly podcast with Neil Welk of CUBuffs.com. Read all of his stuff leading up to a ball game, the post-game wraps as well. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. You can join us for the broadcast on Saturday in Pullman as the Buffaloes will take on Washington State. I hope you take a nap on Saturday because it's a late one, 8:45 with a potential slide to 8:50. We'll get things underway at 6:30 Mountain Time on the Colorado Football Network. Are you sleeping in on Saturday morning, Neil?
Sleeping in all day. We get into Pullman, actually into Lewiston, Idaho on Friday afternoon, sleep in Saturday morning, get up, have breakfast, take a nap, get up, go to the game.
I want everyone to know it's the TV people that do this, not the ink stain wretches like Neil, nor the radio broadcasters like me. We'd play at 1 o'clock every Saturday if we had our druthers. But more importantly, Buffs coming off a win. They snapped their 3-game losing streak last week at Oregon State. I don't know if you got any fingernails left on that one. That one was going down to the wire. I wasn't sure they were going to pull it out. But what I liked coming out of it was the fact that we saw a football team. We talked a little bit about this last week. That made plays to win the game down the stretch.
You know, and that's the difference between that game and the two weeks prior. They've now played their last three games, total difference in score of 10 points. I mean, you know, they lost a 3-point game, they lost a 4-point game, and they won a 3-point game. The difference in all those games is last week they made plays. They finally went out. They got a stop. It was a great play on second down on Ryan Nall. They force a 50-yard field goal. The guy doesn't make it. They come up with an interception. Bryce Bobo, two nice catches in the end zone, a 2-point conversion. They made plays when they had to make plays. It was, you know, they made difference-making plays.
You had a piece that you wrote, I think it was earlier this week, and are we seeing a team in transition? And, you know, listen, the most reliable player in the field has been Philip Lindsay this season. The last two ball games, he has been phenomenal. And it has been, you know, I got to hold Gary down in the broadcast booth because he just loves this, go out and run the football 40, 45 times a game. Are we watching the transition of a football team offensively, you think?
Well, I think it's a you know, they're going to play to their strengths. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost a matter of necessity right now that the four wide receiver sets has not produced with great consistency this year. They're running more tight ends. And like you said, Philip Lindsay is just running as hard as any back I've ever seen. He's playing great. He's had, I think, 69 carries, 466 yards, and 5 touchdowns in the last 2 games. When you have a guy that's running like that, you know, Mark, you know something about horses. You saddle that thing up and you keep riding. and that's what they're doing. And as a result, they're grinding out long drives. I mean, they're grinding out 10-play, 12-play, 15-play drives. They're only 2 teams in the nation that have had 4 drives of 15 plays or longer this year. And that's what they're doing. And so necessity suggests that they do that because it's running the clock. It's keeping things going. And Mike McIntyre also said something interesting yesterday that I think you heard.
Yeah.
You know, number one, it helps keep the defense off the field. It keeps them fresh. When teams are scoring a lot on you, you know, give your defense as much chance as possible to get some rest, to get ready to make those plays. Well, how do you do that? Drive 80 yards in 15 plays, take 9 minutes off the clock.
Going into that game last week, as I looked it up, Philip Lindsay needed about 148 yards a game or so to catch Eric Bieniemy. And I'm thinking, he's probably not going to do that. With the change in philosophy here as of late, we might be talking about the guy that has more rushing yards by the time his career is over than anybody in CU history. You know, it's always easier in hindsight to look back and go, EB, championship team, phenomenal player. You look at some of the other guys, you know, on the list that he's already passed, the Chris Browns and people like that. Great running backs. When it's all said and done, maybe it's already been decided. Is Philip Lindsay one of the best running backs in Colorado history?
Oh, there's no doubt. I don't see how you could say he's not. I mean, if you look at the numbers he's put up, he's put up those numbers against good teams. He's helped Colorado to wins. If you look at last year, what he did, you know, in a 10-win season, they're 4-3 right now. He's played a major role in those victories. And so, yeah, there's no doubt that Philip belongs in the pantheon of great Colorado running backs.
You know, we'll talk more about the game a little bit, but I want to just maybe think of something here in a couple of weeks with the Rashan Salaam thing coming up. What's your favorite memory about Rashan when they retire his number here in a couple of weeks in the Cal game?
You know, my favorite memory is when he went over 2,000 here against Iowa State. Last game of the year, he breaks about a 70-yard run, which is the run that puts him over 2,000. And, you know, he was just a guy that was so dependable. And probably my second favorite memory is the game at Texas. He runs for 320-something yards, about 180 in the second half. Texas is dying. It's about 90 degrees. It's horrific humidity. Everybody thinks, well, that's going to make Colorado wilt. Well, it did just the opposite. You know, they just kept pounding Rashan at that Texas defense, and they pretty soon stopped tackling him. I mean, he just literally ran Texas into the ground. Colorado came back and won that game, and it was a big win for him in that 11-1 season.
Well, Philip Lindsay, Rashan Salaam, one of the greatest Heisman Trophy winner. Philip certainly is putting his name in the record books. It's going to kind of be fun to see what he does the rest of the season. If he can catch Eric Bieniemy, be the all-time leading rusher in Colorado history. You
know, the one question I have is that guy's not as big as Rashan. He's not a 210-pound back. He's not as big as Eric Bieniemy. The question you have is can he handle – you know, five more weeks of carrying the ball 25, 30 times a game. Right now, it looks like he can, but, you know, you don't know what kind of toll that will take on his body. But if it does, Philip will never tell you.
Well, and I was going to say, it's not like the guy right ahead of him was a big guy, and Roddy Stewart. He was a smallish guy as well, but EB certainly was big and thick, not the tallest guy, but certainly some great names up there, and he'll be passing them here as we go on for the last few games of the season. Okay, with that being said, I mean, it's obvious why they're doing that. You talked about playing to your strengths. That has certainly helped, though, Steven Montez here the last few weeks. They've gone 13 consecutive quarters now without having a turnover.
Yeah, I think it's helped Steven become more comfortable with the offense. I think the fourth quarter, if you look at last week, they put together 80-yard-plus drives. Steven threw for, I think, 68 yards on those drives. He was 8 for 10. Just seemed to be much more comfortable. Washington or Oregon State couldn't tee off on him. They had earlier. They'd gotten to him a couple times. They'd forced him out of the pocket. But when Philip got his second, third, fourth gear going, they had to respect the run. They couldn't, you know, dump everybody into the box and come after Steven. And so it opened up the passing lanes a little bit. And I think it definitely made Steven more comfortable, more confident back there. We really needed to see that for him. That's his second game-winning fourth quarter drive of his career.
I wonder as well a little bit with what they've done offensively now. I'd have to think that simplifies things for him a little bit, right? Because you don't have four wide receivers out there. Not making that many reads right now. Only two receivers, Bryce Bobo at $1.26 the other day. Shea Fields, the only wide receiver that that caught a pass in that ball game. And so it's probably taking not only the pressure off of him, the responsibility, because Phillips running for 180 yards a game, but also he doesn't have to make that many decisions out there.
Yeah, no, what it does is it greatly reduces the reads he has. He can look and he can check off of one guy, look to the next one, and if he has to, he can dump it out to the back coming out of the backfield, which they didn't do a lot of last week, but they can. And so I think it simplifies a little bit for Steven. You have to remember that kid has started 10 games in his career, and he's obviously doing something right. You and I were looking at a statistic this week from Pro Football Focus that ranked him the 9th best quarterback in the nation. And so whatever you want to say about the way Steven has played, he's certainly putting up some kind of numbers that is impressing somebody.
Without question. Baker Mayfield, by the way, Oklahoma, number one on that list by Pro Football Focus. Receivers, or rather quarterbacks, seem to have receivers that they rely upon. Bryce Bobo has obviously become that guy for Steven Montez, don't you think? I mean, last week when things broke down, he was looking for number four all the time.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, I think Bryce has been the guy that he has looked for. There was a stretch there where Steven was looking for Jay McIntyre, especially on third down. But last week in tight situations, you know, they got Bryce one-on-one on a corner out there. And Bryce is a big, tall kid who can get open. And if he bodies up on a corner, then it's hard for a corner to cover him, especially if he can get that inside shoulder going. So what Bryce did was, you know, he got himself open, and it's a nice outlet for Steven. He knows that he can throw the ball to Bryce, and he's probably going to catch it.
Well, and he only has to throw it to one side of him, because Bryce catches everything one-handed, by the way. And it was kind of fun to see the opposite, right? The little trick play, the end-around option pass when Bryce Bobo. We found out that he's a left-handed quarterback, by the way, and found Steven Montez. I said to Bryce, now we know you can throw. Second time we've seen him do this. Are you sure Steven can catch on the other end? He said, well, we're pretty sure of it.
And that was a nice play, and that came at the perfect moment. They were struggling a little bit. They'd scored one touchdown on the 74-yard Phillip Lindsay run. They were down in the red zone. They needed to get a touchdown to stay in the game. I thought it was a really nice call, and it worked out perfectly.
All right. So what we've seen for the offense, there's been a bit of a transition, a philosophy change, if you will, relying more upon the offensive line, Phillip Lindsay running the ball, a little ball control. For the second week in a row, we've seen that CU defense give up over 500 yards and 33 points last week. The week before was 45. Teams have found the kryptonite for the Buffs defense, if you will. That unit's not got to respond.
Yeah, I think this is a really important game for that defense to come back. And everybody knows that Washington State throws the ball. That's a big deal. Everybody knows that they're going to be come out throwing a lot. But what Washington State does, they put themselves in a lot of second and third short yardage situations by running the football. Colorado has to stop that run early. They have to stop that run, force Luke Falk into third and long. If you can force him into third and long, then you've got a chance of making him make some mistakes. He's going to have to hold the ball a little bit longer. Then your corners can cover and maybe make some plays. I'm not saying they're going to do what Cal did, but you saw that Cal blueprint. Print last week for how to get to Luke Falk. So that run defense will be very important this week, as well as the pass rush. We haven't had the Buffs haven't had a sack for a couple of weeks now. They need to get in there, put some pressure on Luke Falk, get him off his spot, make him throw quickly, make him uncomfortable. We saw what Cal did.
Yeah, Cal got to Luke Falk 9 times last week. They sacked him. They forced 5 turnovers, or 7 turnovers, I beg your pardon. Was it 5 interceptions and a couple of fumbles in that ball game? You know, last year, Washington State came out of the boxes strong and then tailed off. I don't want to jump ahead of the curve here and say we're seeing a similar thing, but it is kind of interesting the way that their season has kind of gone for them, don't you think?
No, I think that happens a lot. If you go back and look at Mike Leach's teams over the years, Mike's offense and you know his quarterback, his receivers, they come out of the box playing pretty well. For some reason, they've lost their first game a lot, but this year they didn't. But they have that offense running at full speed by halfway through. Well, I think what happens a lot is other teams start to say, okay, this is what we can do against them. They've seen enough film on them. They know exactly what that particular receiver is going to do in his breaks. They know what the quarterback is going to do. And I think teams catch up with them a little bit. I sure hope that this is a week that Colorado can catch up with them.
Boy, I hope so. This league is really kind of crazy, isn't it? I mean, there were teams we thought would be good that aren't. The flip-flop. I mean, I thought Cal was going to be atrocious this year. They've looked pretty good. It really is an unpredictable Pac-12 right now.
Who's the best team in the Pac-12 right now? It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, right now, do you say USC? As USC lost early, they went up to Washington State and lost a close game on a Friday night. They're 6-1 right now. Is it Washington? Well, Washington just got done going down to Tempe, and Arizona State defense just shut them down, held them to 7 points. Is it Stanford? Stanford's playing really well again. They seem to have bounced back after that early season loss to SC. So, you know, I think it's a wide open conference, and I think they're, you know, this schedule for Colorado to me is really interesting with these five games left. There's five teams there that Colorado has the potential to beat. There's five teams there that can beat Colorado. So, I think starting with this weekend, it'll be very interesting.
And, of course, only two of those five still at home. You got the Cal game and the USC game, which we expect to be a night game. Of course, wrap up with the road game at Utah. Do you know who I felt great for last week? Derek McCarty made a couple of huge plays in that game last week at Oregon State. But I've been waiting for him. And he kept, you know, coming off that injury a year ago. It's his senior season and all that goes along with that. It was good to see him get in there and make a few plays last week against the Beavers.
You know, it was good. And what I've noticed, especially at the first of the year and even over the last few weeks, teams were trying to avoid Derek. They knew that edge was not going to be easy to get around, so they were going around the other edge as much as possible. They were doing their best to avoid Derek. Last week, Derek just missed a quarterback sack, but had a big tackle on a reverse that if he doesn't get that guy's foot and trip him up, he might still be running somewhere in Corvallis. And so, yeah, I think it was very good to see Derek make some plays. He's rounding. I think he's finally got his football legs back under him. I think he's finally starting to feel comfortable out there. So he's a guy I think you'll see something more of over these last five games.
I'm hopeful, and I don't know how you change things midstream, but the way the defensive front has played or not played, you're talking about being stout against the run. That unit, when I look over all this football team, that unit at this point might have struggled as much as any unit on this team, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's the biggest difference between this year and last year. You can look at a lot of different places and say, what's wrong with the defense and why isn't the offense playing well and all those kind of things. But I think the biggest thing is last year they had three stout 300-pound guys there. All three of those guys were in NFL camps last summer. All three of them. Well, you know, they've got one 300 pounder up there, or a couple of them, none of them with a lot of Division I experience. Leo Jackson's the only one that has really a lot of D1 experience. And Leo's even a little undersized. He's about 280. And so that's been, if you're looking for the biggest difference between this year and a year ago is that defensive line. And they're missing some people there. You know, Javi Edwards was hurt last week. They had a dismissal from the team, a guy that they thought was going to play quite a bit in fall camp, and he never did end up playing for him. So it's just been one of those places, and certainly it's a place that you hope they can figure out how to make things work over these last five.
Mike McIntyre said something at his press conference on Tuesday that I hadn't really thought about, and it makes sense. The Buffs, when they've had to cover kicks, have not been great, or when they've been at return kicks, I should say, have not been great this season. And he said, well, we don't get any practice at home, and I hadn't thought about that. And, you know, last week, Davis Price, Chris Graham, I think, came in and had one kickoff. Not one of them, as I recall, I might be wrong, but I'm not sure, one of them went to the end zone. And so they had to cover every single time, which at home this season, I'm trying to think if they've even had a return at home. I don't think they have.
I think they've had one. And, you know, they're doing all right with their kick coverage. I think that's been – but it's the kick return team. Yeah. And that's – people say, well, why don't you practice it? Well, that's one of the hardest things in the world to practice because it's full speed. Guys that are running 30 and 40 yards downfield full speed, that's where the most injuries occur. More injuries occur on special teams than on any other – than any other place if you look at the number of plays. And so it's hard to practice your kick returns full speed and send somebody down there blocking. And so they try and do it once in a while in practice. They run some, you know, halves or it's full speed, but it's not full contact. But yeah, they need to block better on those returns because starting at your 17 is not as good as the 25.
No, and I think some of those young return guys too. They're very youthful. Sitting next to Gary up there in the booth all the time, the coach. He goes, "Oh, you can just tell they're just chomping at the bit to bring it out."
Oh yeah, they're looking at there, and all they see is green. They don't see anything else. They don't see the 11 guys on the other side ready to tackle them. You know, you can see the headlines in their head. Boy, they're going to write that headline. They're going to take one back to the house, and then all of a sudden, reality sets in, and doesn't work out well.
Well, remember, I'm sure Ronnie Blackman, Katie Nixon, all the guys we're talking about, probably did have a number they returned back in high school. Guess what? You're not playing against those same cats anymore.
No, exactly. These are all they're playing against Division I guys. And you know, I really think that those guys are good enough that we're going to see them pop a couple when they have the opportunity. They're going to have to pick their spots a little bit better. And Colorado's got to block better on that return team.
You know what's been interesting, just sitting here thinking about special teams? We haven't talked about Alex Kinney all season long because we haven't had to. And he's a little bit like a long snapper, right? If you're talking about the punter, generally it's because something bad happened. We haven't said a word about him because he's been outstanding this year.
Yeah, no, Alex has had a really very nice, consistent year. He hasn't been booming, but he's had a lot of kicks inside the 20. Mm-hmm. He's done really well. They haven't had any big punt returns against him. The only mistake came against Washington when they blocked that kick and had a 12-yard field for a touchdown. Other than that, the punt team has played really well. Overall, Colorado's special teams have played well. And again, it's a little bit about what you said. We haven't had to talk about them. Mm-hmm. Their special teams, I looked the other day, they're 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th in the conference in punts, kickoff returns, kick coverage, all those things. They're right in the middle. And what that means is they haven't given up any of those negative momentum plays. Yeah. And that's more than anything, that's what you want out of your special teams. First goal, don't give up any negative momentum plays.
Even that blocked punt, I mean, if you remember correctly, Javier Edwards was not out there. A backup came in and the shield got blown up. And so that one didn't even fall on Alex in that one. Hey, let's shift gear here a little bit of men's basketball. On Wednesday, we had media day for the men's and women's basketball team. I was out there last week for the season ticket holder deal that we had on Sunday where they can come in and watch the team practice. What's kind of exciting you or intriguing you about Tad Boyle's team here in 2017-18?
The thing I like about them is they were picked 9th in the league. And they got a lot of young guys. I think George King is set for a very good year. This has the chance to be George's year. You know, he's the old guy on the team. He's certainly going to be a focal point of the offense. He can do a lot of different things. George is looking to extend his career and play for money. And so I think he's going to have a very good year. The opposite end of that spectrum is all the young kids. And you've seen those young kids play. There's a lot of promising players there. I think this team... You know, I is it an NCAA tournament team? Right now you look at it and say it's pretty hard to say that. But I think this team is going to surprise some people and beat some people they probably shouldn't just because it's some good young kids.
Well, so a reporter asked me earlier this week one day in the Champions Center, he said, what do you think of that basketball team? I said, well, I don't know. I love all the individual pieces. They're fantastically talented. I mean, guys like Tyler Bay don't come around that often. Evan Batty's as unique as any player you're going to see in college basketball. McKinley Wright, I think, is a superstar in the making. I mean, he might be a guy that ends up being a four-year starter. We just don't know what they all look like when they're wearing the same color playing on the same team because, you know, who knows what chemistry is. But, boy, the individual parts look fantastic.
Yeah, the individual parts look great. And from what I've seen in practices, I really like the athleticism. I like their basketball IQ. The younger kids, I really like their basketball IQ. They know what they're doing on the floor. You can tell they feel very comfortable. What will be really interesting to me is see what kind of lineup Tad Boyle puts on the floor and then what kind of rotation he has because he has some choices there. If he wants to go big up front, he's got Torrey Miller. He's got Lucas Siewert. He's got Dallas Walton out on the wings. You know, he's got the young guys Tyler Bay and Deshaun Swartz. He's got George King, obviously, point guard. I'm guessing is going to be McKinley Wright, shooting guard. You know, where do you fit Naaman Wright in? So I think that rotation is going to be a lot of fun to see how Tad works that out.
College basketball, though, over the years following this, if you've got a legitimate point guard, a leadership-oriented, I'm controlling everything, I'm orchestrating the offense point guard, that can cover up a lot of liabilities elsewhere. In recent years, I think you can say, without having that type of individual out there, that kind of play at the point guard position, there were teams that seemed a little bit... I don't know if disjointed is the right word, but just frantic. It weren't fluid, however you want to put it. So having a guy that controls everything and really is the quarterback, if you will, if you can borrow that term, on the basketball court could really, I think, become a gelling factor on a team.
No, I think McKinley's that kid. You know, it's so funny. I've talked to him several times since he got here. If you talk to him, you think you're talking to a senior in college.
Yeah, he's very mature.
Oh, my gosh, extremely mature, has a great grip on everything that he wants to do on the floor. I watch him in practice. He's already directing traffic. I mean, he's coming down the floor. He's bringing it down the floor. He's pointing to where guys should be. He's calling out the plays. He's communicating. He's very vocal. He's very, you know, he's strong with what he's doing. He's also a really physical kid, and he's a tough kid. I mean, he's backing up what he's saying. And so I think McKinley's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think he has a chance to make a difference on this team.
Yeah, the Buffaloes will have that open scrimmage on October 28th. That's the day the Cal game is happening here in town. They've got the exhibition game against, the School of Mines on October 30th, and then open up the season with against Northern Colorado shortly thereafter. Real quick, as we segue back to football, I'll throw down the particulars for the game and the broadcast on Saturday night. By the way, apparently Khalil Tate is a pretty good football player. In case you noticed what he did against UCLA last week.
You know, I was curious to see what he would do, and whether that was just an aberration, what he did against Colorado, and evidently it wasn't. I think he carried 15 times, 220 yards. He had a 49-yard touchdown run, a 71-yard touchdown run. He also threw for 160 yards. And I laughed because after the game, Jim Morris said, "We had one job." You know, he said, "We practiced all week long with all 11 guys, one job, stop that quarterback." And he said, "We didn't do it." So I don't think that makes Colorado feel any better. But if there is a sense of vindication, it's in the fact that, yes, that kid is that good. And I think you're going to see him do more and more as that comes along.
You know, it was funny on the flight flying home. That game was on TV while we're flying, and everybody on the plane was having the same buzz. At one point, Neil's across the aisle, yells over me, "Hey, you see what Tate's doing out there?" So the kid's actually a pretty good football player. Check out Neil's stuff at CUBus.com leading up to the ballgame on Saturday night in Pullman, Washington. Our coverage in the Colorado Football Network gets underway at 6:30 Mountain Time with the Buffalo Stampede. Gary Barnett, Bobby Pasavano, and yours truly. Also going to be joined for a few minutes in a pregame by Tad Boyle. We'll talk some basketball with him since we've got a little extra time. And then the Buffs and the Cougars will kick it off at 8:47. We'll talk to you from Pullman, Washington. For Neil Welk, CUBus.com. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us on this week's Buffs Insider.